What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Freedom. Freedom! Well, sign away my freedom. Why, this is ridiculous.
Don't be corny, brother.
Sure, our system of free enterprise isn't perfect. But before we throw it away for some imported double talk, let's turn the clock back a few years to see what it's done for us.
With your host, Mike Paul.
Anyway, so Nick and Tyler know this, but I have this ridiculous, outrageous car. It's a 59 Buick LeSabre, and it sat in a barn for 20 to 30 years. Nobody really knows. So it's got what we call patina. It's original paint, white and blue, all faded with some rust, and just, you know, only time can make it look this preposterous and amazing. And it's also on air ride, so it slams the frame down to the ground when you hit the air ride switches down. It shoots flamethrowers out the exhaust. It's got a $1,200 sound system in it, blue LED lights in the headliner. And the car itself is just the most, like, sadistic, evil, nasty-looking vehicle you've ever seen. Like, if you're not a car guy, look up a 59 Buick LeSabre. It's just a wild-looking car. So it's kind of like the only toy I have left. And I got four kids now, so I don't really have much time for my car hobby. But my mother-in-law surprised us today saying she could watch the kids, so my wife and I could go out. So we go out to eat, which is like a mile and a half from our house. And I tell my wife, like, hey, can we take the Buick? She goes, yeah. Like, she likes it. She's not a car person like me, but she's like, yeah, let's take it for a spin. That'll be fun. So I had a couple drinks at dinner, and I was like, well, you're going to drive home. Because number one, my tags are 2 years expired, and I don't drive this thing. So
yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to renew the tags. So I was like, you're going to drive because, you know, we're in the middle of town. But it's only a mile drive, so she's going to drive it home. She's like, oh, come on. I don't mind being in the car, but I don't like driving it. She's driven it twice in 5 years. This was the second time. And she pulls out of the restaurant, goes onto Main Street, and what happens? It runs out of gas.
No.
So, and the other wild thing about this car is that it doesn't just start it. You don't turn the key and crank it like a traditional car. You turn the key to the center and you floor the gas pedal to start it. So it's like a golf cart. You floor it to initiate or to turn on the starter. So I was like, put it in neutral, put it in neutral. She goes, I don't know what that means. So like I'm in the passenger seat. I pop it in neutral. I put my hand onto the gas pedal from the passenger seat and floor it. And it starts cranking and sputtering and sputtering. I'm like, shit, we're out of gas. This is clearly the problem.
Right, so in the middle of the street.
So my wife gets nervous. She goes, we're next to a Snyder's pharmacy. She goes, I can't be seen with this. I'm going in there. I'm going inside the restaurant. You figure this out. Or she's going inside the pharmacy. I'm like, Ash, I've had three beers. Like, you're just going to hang me with a DUI if a cop shows up right now. Like, what do you mean you're going inside? So she finally comes back, and this couple that's in their 60s, like, comes up, and they're like, oh, this is way too cool of a car to leave on the side of the road. Let's give you a push to the gas station, which is, like, 700 feet ahead. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. So they're like, you want to hop in? I was like, no, I'm not going to hop in right now. Like, my wife can, though. So my wife hops in, puts it in neutral. We shove it, and, like, we just happened to get a green light that was right before the gas station and shoved it right in and filled it up, and it all is well that ends well.
I wish she would have hit the flamethrowers.
Yeah, but it just had to happen, you know? It's just like... good times. So that's how my night's been going.
She's probably red in the face.
Yeah, she said we're never taking it again. She goes, we're taking the minivan next time. I'm like, no, we're not.
Put flamethrowers on the minivan, dude.
We can.
Yeah.
Did you have to pop start it when you put the gas back in, or did you just start right back up?
No, so yeah, it's an automatic transmission. I just once we put gas in it, I just sat there and cranked it and pumped the gas, and it popped over, and we got home. So yeah, it's a great time. So yeah. Anyways, let's get to some Liberty content.
How long are you going to keep it? All right, let's do it. How long are you going to keep them tags expired for?
That's a good start to the Liberty conversation.
That is a great start. So my excuse is always going to be that I just got out of storage today.
Same.
Hell yeah, that's a
my
yeah.
my CTSV, I'm running on 15 months right now, and I that's my ace up my sleeve. It's been broken down for a year, man, and I just got it out of storage, and I need to make sure it's running right because I gotta sell it because, you know, long story. And then what is the point? Like, we have this movement on the podcast that we are trying to end the DMV because it's like ending the Fed is a little ambitious, right? And it's not realistic. Like, we need to take down some local tyrants before we can go for the big ones, you know? So abolish the DMV. And like, what is the point of those stickers? People just pay $200 a year for a fucking sticker. We say, let's just get rid of that. We think we can get a populist movement behind it. So we just got to get the right ears.
Dude, I've been riding for the past 3 years in my daily driver, no tags, no license. I just know I always drive in the right lane. I got a whole strategy to evading. The whole trick is don't get pulled over to begin. Don't let the cops present an opportunity to pull you over. If I get in a wreck, I'm fucked. You know, I got to go. Can I say fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. If I get in a wreck, I'm fucked. I go straight to jail. But if you stay in the right, it forces you to become a better driver. You have to be a retard whisperer on the road, anticipate everyone as a retard, and try to avoid a wreck.
It's valid. I mean, probably a solid 90% of people on the roads are retards, especially in the state of Arizona. I lived in Arizona for a bit. My car insurance went up like $50 a month. It was some of the worst drivers ever.
Yeah, man, I actually go to the DMV yesterday, and I've been procrastinating this. I turned 30 in September, and my license has been expired ever since then. But there was like this, the DMV was closed because of the lockdowns, and they had this thing where it's like, oh, we're gonna forgive it. But then, like, all of a sudden, once it gets reignited or like back into law, you don't know when they allow it, so you're gonna get fined for a late fee. So I bought a brand new truck, or new to me, it's a 2002, but I bought a new truck. And I had to register it. So I was like, every time I drive by the DMV, it has a line around the door. But yesterday, my daily driver, I was backing out of the driveway and the brake locked up. So I had to do a brake job on it. So I was like, well, I got to take the truck and I might as well register it. So I went to the DMV and I'm in a 3,000 person farm town. It was a 2 hour wait in my town to get through the DMV. And I get there and it's like, dude, I was just dishing out red pills like it was my job to everyone in line. I was like, I was sitting there and everyone's kind of complaining like, oh man, this is kind of ridiculous. They haven't given us our numbers yet. And I was like, you know what would be great? We should put these people in charge of our healthcare. And they're like, oh man, yeah. Like that's such a ridiculous statement. And then I see a couple other people in line that have never even thought about that. They're kind of like, whoa, yeah, that would be wild. Like, that's a crazy idea. Make the DMV into our hospitals? Like, we don't bleed out in the emergency room. But there's, like, this guy who's, like, in his 60s, like, pops up, and he's got this long hair and this, like, cowboy hat on. He's like, how long's the wait? We're like, 1 to 2 hours. He goes, good thing I brought my lawn chair and my cigar. And he literally pops out a lawn chair, sits down, and lights up a cigar at, like, 9 in the morning. Nice. And we're just hanging out there, but, dude, yeah. See, yeah,
the accelerationist method, kind of like what you've done, is to count how many people are there and say, who's here to pay some tax? Let's add this money up. And then you come up to a number that's a 4 or 5 figure number, and you go, and they can't hire one fucking other person in here to get this line moving. And we want to give them – this is just for us today. How many people are in this town? 3,000? Do the math on that. Look how much money they're bleeding from us. And then you won't have to worry about the wait because the DMV will be burned down.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and I actually, like, you can't take it out on the workers inside there because, like,
that's not true. I will.
I say you can't. So the guy next to me was probably in his mid-60s, but very conservative. So we were chatting for an hour just about politics and everything going on in the world. But then he gets in line and he's in front of me, and they let 6 people in at a time to the DMV. And what they do, it's like you would swear it was 1926, the way they bring you into the DMV. They come out by hand and write you a number on a piece of paper, and then they let 5 people into there at a time. And once your number's up, they have a piece of paper with a marker that they put like 10 to 15 and place it in the window. Like, it's not even like when you go to the deli, you have like a ticket that's kind of real and you have like the digital readout of your number. No, this is like marker and paper and a person walking out to give you a number. It was like we're 100 years in the past with technology. But we get in there and the guy's talking to the lady working there, and you can just tell like she's in her mid 60s and she's miserable. Like, who wouldn't be doing this job?
She's fucking had it.
Yeah. So he asked her, he goes, so how long have you been doing this job? She goes, 9 years. He goes, what do you think about it? I'm really tired, is what she said. And she goes, I have 3 more years to get my pension. And, but she was just like, they're just walking like zombies. And have you ever had or been a felon? Yes or no? Like, they just talk to you and read out these things. And that's what they do all day. It's just such a preposterous, like, department. There's no need for it.
It's extortion.
Yes.
Damn. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a soul-sucking profession, and it's meant to be, you know, and it's all about that P word, the pension. I mean, that's really what it's about. They get a honeypot at the end of the rainbow. And I mean, obviously in states like ours, Illinois, they're going to go dry sooner rather than later. You know, barring any, well, I mean, I guess the money printer has been going burr, and it's going to go burr into oblivion. So, I mean, they're going to get bailouts after bailouts, and, you know, we're just going to, the shit's going to hit the fan. You're talking about the accelerationist theory. So, I mean, that's really what it's all about. It's not like we can turn back the clock and try to stop, like, hey guys, in the year 1990, we need to stop all of this deficit spending, and it's going to end badly. You know, we're past that point. So why not just enjoy the ride and just mock it and have some fun with it with some humor.
Exactly. I can't believe they hired the tiredest lady, apparently. And yeah, think that this tired lady, by the time it's time for her to take a nap, it's going to be a huge nap that we all pay for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no shit.
I want to be sleepy, dude. I can't be sleepy. I got to be a crazy person. This lady gets to be sleepy and gets paid well for it.
Yeah.
So
gets her mandated breaks and everything.
So El Pulpo, I got to be honest with you. Tyler brought you here on recommendation from Twitter. And I honestly don't know much about your following or anything you stand for, but any friend of Tyler is a friend of mine. So I was like, hey, let's bring him on the show, and we'll see what he's got to say. So, what exactly do you believe in? Who are you, and what's your deal?
See, here's the thing. You guys do a smart person's podcast, right? Pete Quinones, he does a smart person's podcast too. I don't do a smart person's podcast. I do a stupid person's podcast because that's. That's my strength, is being a stupid person. So I feel really weird when I go on these shows and they're like, all right, you know, taught you guys could probably do like good math and stuff, probably read a lot of books. I can't do those things. So then when people are like, what do you believe? I'm like, I don't know. I just, I know nothing in the government works. You know, I'm definitely an anarchist. I don't call myself ANCAP or anything like that. Just anarchist, dude. I'm not smart enough to do economics, so I don't pretend to. I'm not going to tell you about, you know, trade deficits or anything. I don't know. That could be a good thing. I don't know. So I'm not taking a side on any of that. I don't know anything about Bitcoin. All right. I don't. I just, I really hate government. I don't like the police, you know. Not, I mean, who does? Come on. The point is, I'm just anarchist, dude. And I like pointing out the absurdities and stuff. I guess it's kind of funny. I like talking, you know, some shit. So I talk shit to Blue Checks on Twitter a lot, and then I get banned a lot. I'm banned right now. We couldn't set up the because I got banned 2 hours before the show started. So we had to play the telephone game to get you guys my email address to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, this is truly like the first mystery box guest we've had. I'm like, Tyler's like, all right, I'm bringing this guy on who's funny on Twitter and he does jujitsu. I'm like, all right, I'll talk to him. You know?
So that's the thing. When you guys invited me and I see jujitsu there, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, I'm definitely going on. I can't ever talk jujitsu with any of my other, like the other people who I associate with daily on Twitter. They don't know jujitsu. They don't go to the gym and they don't fight or do anything like that. I love fighting. I figure every anarchist would love fighting. I can't believe that they don't.
Exactly. That's actually a question I got for you. So I've had this kind of hypothesis that I floated on the podcast before, and I'm sure you've noticed this too, that not that most grapplers are libertarians or anarchists or anything, but it's significantly higher percentage than the general population of people who grapple and aren't blue-pilled NPCs. Like, they generally question things more. And my theory is that I think just to walk into a jiu-jitsu gym or an MMA gym, you have to be wired a little bit differently. Like, you can't just be completely blue-pilled and do what you're told and not question things. It takes a little bit of curiosity to even, like, want to try. And then you notice that as people go on, and the people who really stick for years are people who, again, question everything they hear and they think about things abstractly. And those are the people who excel at jiu-jitsu. I mean, is that kind of the sense that you get from it?
I don't know, but I thought of a really funny joke while you're saying this. And I think only you and I will get it. But I wonder if Gracie Barra makes you wear a Gracie Barra mask when you go in their facility.
Oh, I bet. I've had this joke where it's like, not a joke, but the Gracies, I mean, don't get me wrong. We stand on the shoulders of giants, and the Gracies were extremely important and all this stuff. But especially the second and third generation Gracies have tried to hijack and, like, trademark jiu-jitsu as theirs. Like, they still refer to it as Gracie jiu-jitsu, and yeah, even calling it Brazilian. Yeah. And even calling it Brazilian jiu-jitsu is misleading, because it's like, okay, if you go to 1980 in Rio de Janeiro, what people are doing in the US right now, it's, yeah, the same objectives and everything, but it's completely different with the advent of leg locks and all of this wrestling influence and people adding their own shit. And it's just, and you watch, like, the Gracies, they put, like, if they had dog shit bags that they could put the Gracie triangle on and sell them, they would do it. Like, they're just merchandise whores, and they try to brand everything.
I was going to ask that, like, do they require people that train there, if they have pictures at the gym, that they have to tag the gym? Because, like, I've even seen John Jones doing it. Like, he's always tagging Gracie Barra Albuquerque and shit.
It wouldn't surprise. I hate those Gracie Barra guys. I'm not going to lie. They're the biggest cult. I mean, that's the Scientology of jiu-jitsu, I think.
Yeah. And guess what? The IBJJF for Mike and Tyler, the IBJJF, like, they want to be the government of jiu-jitsu. Like, yeah, they really hate
those guys.
Like,
too.
Oh yeah. I've still have never done an IBJJF event, because, like, you get there and they measure your sleeves to make sure they're the proper length. And, you know, everything is, like, very official, and they have all the rules that have, like, they don't create, there is no governing body in jiu-jitsu, right? It's very decentralized. But the IBJJF tries to do their best to be the government. Like, they want to tell you, like, knee reaping is not allowed. That's a dangerous, bad technique, and it is because we say so. And then a lot of gyms, especially, like, Gracie Barra, they adopt those ideas, and they kind of become permanent in the ether in jiu-jitsu. So it's a little frustrating. But what I like about it, and I'm sure El Pupo, you'll agree with this, is that decentralized nature of it. Like, there's a lot of creativity and there's no enforcing. Everything is extremely, like, voluntary, and the way it's organized is pretty beautiful.
Oh yeah. And then this comes back to your initial question for me too. And I agree with what you said, but I came to the conclusion kind of in the backwards way. And I started doing jiu-jitsu. I've been doing jiu-jitsu since I was a teenager, and I'm 30 now. And I always think the people who do jiu-jitsu, yeah, you have to – the people who are better at it, I find, regardless of how intelligent they are, I find the people who are better at it and learn quicker are people who just think in a stranger manner. They don't have to be handheld, taught everything. I think people who are anarchists are by nature that way, or people who are extreme libertarian become by nature that way, because they – don't look at, oh, you got Republican, Democrat, you got to go one of the two. They look at the things differently. They solve the puzzle differently. And so I'm like, man, if we could get like Eddie Bravo did this with Gio Martinez and Richie Martinez, he brought in these breakdancers. And he's like, dude, these breakdancers have such insane core strength and they go upside down and everything. They'd be perfect for the jiu-jitsu. They'd be killers. And he was right. These guys are absolute insane killers. And I'm thinking, man, if we could get a bunch of, like, these freaking smart anarchist people in here who just think in things in different ways, you can kind of tell. Like, you can see the way someone works through something and go, okay, that guy is thinking in a strange manner. And it could be good, it could be bad. But I want that guy doing jiu-jitsu, because I bet they'd be really good.
Yeah, you know, Eddie Bravo is actually who I was going to bring up when we're talking about this, and then you brought him up.
I was thinking Eddie Bravo too.
Yeah, no, and Eddie Bravo, I'll tell you this, like, I'm 26, turn 27 in a month, but I've been doing jiu-jitsu since right about when I started. I was 19, so I've been training about 8 years and came from wrestling before that. But when I found Joe Rogan's podcast, I think it was 2012, and I heard Eddie Bravo, and then I got into jiu-jitsu like shortly after. And the first thing I thought about Eddie Bravo, I'm like, oh, this guy's like fun to listen to with conspiracies and everything. But then when I started watching his instructionals when I was, you know, like a white belt, like starting out, and right away, I'm like, this guy, the way he thinks just clicks with me. Like when he talks about concepts and techniques, he's coming at it from a radically different angle where it's not like these turn by turn directions that you try to memorize and get into your muscle memory. He's saying like, here's the way to think about this. Like just take a completely outside approach and conceptualize this. And Eddie Bravo, you know, he's come up with the rubber guard, the twister, the lockdown half guard, all these crazy original things, which it's very hard to be truly original in jiu-jitsu because so much has already been done. And there's so many millions of hours combined on the mat that you're not going to find much new. Like maybe you have one thing that you contribute after, you know, 10 years of training. And Eddie Bravo is also a motherfucking flat earther. Okay. So the dude thinks differently. And the thing is, I'm not a flat earther, but he can back up and make a case. Yeah. But he can make a case for flat earth. And he knows about like the moon landing. He's got all this shit memorized because like he truly does think abstractly. And people will make fun of him and call him an idiot. And it's like, okay, say what you want about him, that he's wrong or misled. But the dude's not dumb. Like he's a revolutionary kind of thinker, especially in jiu-jitsu, you know?
Plus a lot of anarchists like, or at least say they want to get in shape and do all this jiu-jitsu. What's a better way to get in shape than doing jiu-jitsu? Your stamina's through the roof. You know how you learn a very valuable skill in learning to fight and defend yourself. It is a huge confidence booster, which I've seen a lot of Twitter accounts on there and a lot of, people I come across on the timeline could probably use some jiu-jitsu confidence boosting.
I was going to say that I've seen, you know, having been a lot more active on Twitter the last couple of years, especially like I see a lot of people that talk tough and I'm like, I don't even know if you could run a mile, dude. Like, you know, it's like that meme where they show like doomsday preppers, like with their body armor and this like decked out rifle with just a massive gut. I'm like, come on, dude.
Yeah, Nick kind of really made me realize the actual kind of people that exist in the whole like BJJ world. Like my initial thought of it when he first started doing it, I kind of mocked it. I'm like there's like just a bunch of meatheads, like just a bunch of guys like want to fight and fuck each other up. Like that's all I thought it was. But then Nick started doing it and I saw like the happiness and like the like just enthusiasm and passion. And I was like, oh, dude, you get the same shit out of this that I get out of playing guitar. Like, this is just like it's a learning curve. And like, you just want to keep getting better and better. And then I meet the guys that he's training with and they are not meatheads. They're like articulate, very intelligent, like super, like no ego, easygoing dudes. And I'm like, I had this all wrong. Like these guys are just very humble and like just, you know, they like walk, you know, speak softly and carry a big stick type personality.
Nerd assassins, man.
Yeah.
Nerd assassins. I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I have not rolled, but I would assume that probably if you walk in there all meat headed out, you're probably and get strangled within the first 5 minutes of rolling with someone, it probably humbles you a little bit, huh?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know how it happens at your gym, Nick, but I'm sure it's probably very similar to what happens at mine. And many other gyms across the nation is when you get someone like that, usually you kind of put the white belts, the new guys, either you put them with new guys, you don't let them roll for a bit, you know, you let them do drills first, get the feel for jiu-jitsu. But if guys come in, they're really eager to roll. They're like, okay, you can roll. We'll put you with a white belt who has some experience. If that guy's thrashing the white belt, then you go, okay, we're going to put you now with the high school wrestling guy who's, really needs a fix after wrestling in high school and hasn't wrestled also, or D1 college wrestler guy who's a blue belt and who's 20 pounds lighter than you. And then the blue belt absolutely fucking murders him and he chokes him in all the mean ways.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You have like the Matt Enforcer, you know, which is a fun, it's a fun role to play. I mean, we, over the years that we've had some characters come into our gym that you guys are talking about, the meatheads that, that, you know, come in with the egos. And it's, what's beautiful is there's a douchebag filter, like the guys who absolutely can't stand losing and are completely delusional about how tough they are. Don't last. Like you need to accept like, okay, I suck at this new thing and it's not what I thought it was. And I really need to like admit to myself that I'm starting from ground zero here. And it's almost like a baptism. Like you're starting with a clean slate. Like you just must accept that you are starting from the bottom here and that you need to submit to other people and grow. So, that's sort of the process.
Now the bad news is that in boxing and Muay Thai gyms, this also occurs. This happens as well. The thing that's good about jiu-jitsu is you can have the blue belt fuck this guy up and the guy can go to his job the next day. And in boxing, you get instances like Charlie Zelenov or someone who comes in. It doesn't happen as much in a striking sport because of the implication, of course, of dying, getting out of hand or getting hit. You know, most people have never been hit before. And once they're hit, within the first two times, they learn very, very quickly whether they want to continue being hit ever again in their life. A lot of people decide no. And sometimes it's surprising the people who decide no, they just don't like being hit. But this does happen, but like striking too. And those guys get, you know, usually those guys don't actually ever come back again. They get fucked up and they go, fuck this place. I'm not coming back. Bunch of fucking bullies. It's never their fault. In jiu-jitsu, you will see guys come back every once in a while, though. It does filter out a lot of the meatheads who would be permanently stuck this way. But some come back. Like I'm friends with guys who were really upset when they first came to jiu-jitsu. Now they're really good. They just stuck with it. They figured, like you said, hey, you're not going to win them all. You don't know it yet. So how can you be good?
So Charlie Zelenov, is that the guy that challenged Deontay Wilder?
Yeah.
That's, okay. If Mike and Nick, if you guys haven't seen this guy on YouTube, he's a complete ass clown. But he called out Deontay Wilder, and Deontay Wilder like answered the call. He's like, I'll box you. And then this guy just routinely gets the shit kicked out of him.
Well, he did way worse. He was calling Deontay Wilder's cell phone and saying insane things about his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's what Charlie Zelenov is. He's there's something actually wrong with him, and his dad is a bad guy who kind of lets this happen. And if anything, he's encouraging it almost. And Charlie will, he goes to like YMCAs and stuff, and walks up to unassuming people, says, "You want to spar?" And the people are like, "Okay, we're just barely going to tap each other, right?" And before he doesn't even answer, he just starts hitting them, beating the shit out of these people. And the people are like, what the fuck, dude? What are you doing, you nut? And then he puts his hands in the air and goes, undefeated, 147-0. But every once in a while, he'll talk shit to real boxers. Like Deontay Wilder's one of them. And he was saying insane stuff. Deontay Wilder said, okay, here's my address. Come here right now. And I guess Charlie Zelenov showed up and Deontay Wilder mollywopped him and he ran out of the gym. It is really funny, but the guy is still, there's something wrong with him too. I don't know how you fix that problem, to be honest.
Yeah. With a dude like that, I mean, it really is a mental, like that guy has to be mentally ill. Like he is completely just deranged. I mean, if you think that, first of all, I've seen the videos, like it wasn't until you brought up the hitting people before they touch the gloves thing. I remember that video going viral a couple of years ago. I'm like, that guy is a sick fuck. Yeah, he's a sick fuck. I mean, that's all it is. Like you're beating up on people that aren't there to fight you. Like he's just a piece of shit. And it's sad that he even got that kind of notoriety, that people know his name, that he got that kind of fame. But I mean, if he thought, it's almost like you want to be so happy about the Deontay Wilder thing that he beat the shit out of him. But the fact that it even took place and that guy even agreed to it shows that he's not there. Like he's legit crazy. And there are legit crazy people that are great martial artists, right? Like Tony Ferguson and Mike Perry, you know, those guys are actually crazy, but they've put in the work. This guy's just sort of a pussy who beats up on people.
Mike Perry's Florida man.
He is.
He's Florida man for sure.
Oh, by the way, if you guys, great documentary. Have you guys ever watched Beige Frequency on YouTube? Are you guys familiar with that YouTube channel?
No,
this guy,
Beige, Tyler may have not told you, but I am very racist against white people. Beige anything out of the question.
Dude, I'm telling you guys, he just throws bombs. And it's so funny because all these like pearl clutching, like suburban soccer moms get so upset. We don't even own a car. And it's just incredible that, like, so, and correct me if I tell this story wrong, but so like the backstory is on Twitter, there's he gets in a thread and starts insulting people. Like, I bet your husband, you know.
Oh, that wasn't me who said that one.
Was that Lee?
No, I'm not sure who that person was.
Oh, but yeah, I'm going to butcher the story now. I was trying to cram in some more time on the podcast before I logged in here. But anyways, they're like, you know, I bet you your husband films you and your boyfriend, you know, having sex in your family car. And the lady, all she responds with is, we don't even own a car. Like, I hope you get back on Twitter because I just love cruising the timeline and I just see just absolute haymakers just insulting blue check marks that live in New York City. It's beautiful.
The bad news is I think I don't know, maybe I got to figure out a way to get back on because I've out of Google Voice numbers, which used to be my way to circumvent Twitter bans. So I'm out of those. Now I'm kind of stuck. I may make my girlfriend do it. Make some Google Voice numbers for me.
Yeah, it's crazy. They're purging. I watch like my follower count just it fluctuates in like a 10 person ratio, and I usually just wait to see the help me find my friends tweet, and then I'm like, all right, I think I know who that is. I be hope for you. They unbanned Pete Quinones.
Yeah, it's true. He has way more pool than I do. Paul Brothers, have you heard any white racial slurs before?
Oh, dude, first our grandpa was an Italian, right? And I heard him say more racist shit about white people than pretty much anybody else. It was always dumb fucking Polacks and drunken mix and stuff. And I'm like, hell yeah. Like the time he grew up in, it's like, you know, there was the Italian neighborhood, the Irish neighborhood, Swedish. It was that kind of thing, right? And nobody got offended. It's just like, oh yeah, he's a dumb Polack, but it's like your next door neighbor. And they were still friends with the people. It's just like, you gotta, you know, don't mind him. He's just a dumb Polack. Well, it was that kind of thing.
And clearly they all started banging each other because Nick and I are mixed with all these ethnicities now.
Yeah. So
they didn't really mean it.
Now here's the problem though. Now let's say you go down to the city and you encounter a lady with a bunch of metal in her face and her hair is a bizarre color and she clearly doesn't train jujitsu. Let's put it that way. And you want to racially abuse her because she's yelling nonsense at you. What would you call her then? You don't know her background. So you need new white racial slurs. Luckily, I'm a white racial slur connoisseur and I can arm you guys with some if you'd like to hear some.
Oh, I'd like to hear them.
Well, first, you can always hit her. The first one, and it's probably the classic, is Mayo Monkey. If she's a large lady, Mayo Monkey, bam, right up the alley. It's a mayonnaise one, so it's insulting big people, and it's a monkey, you know, white. I mean, just imagine a monkey made of mayo, dude. That'd be what you're looking at right now, you know, Mayo Monkey. After you hit her with the Mayo Monkey jab, you have a big right hand coming in, Chalk Roach. Get out of here, Chalk Roach, bam. Chalk Roach doesn't do it. You can always, if you want to, if you're speaking to a non-white and you want to express your disgust, you can always refer to the whites as the gluish people.
Gluish people.
I don't trust any gluish people, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's like, man, I was laughing so hard when I listened to that because it's so true. And like, they don't know what hit them. Like, I introduced the term Mayo Monkey to a buddy of mine, and he's like, that's the funniest shit I've ever heard.
Oh, there's way more. There's, of course, white people love biking, so you can call them a bike baboon. You can also call them a golf gorilla. You can call them yogurt yeti or yachting yeti, depending on where you rank them socioeconomic class of the person you're talking to.
Yeah, oh, that is incredible.
You can call them, you know, cum skin, arctic ape, or plaster primate, talcum termite.
Talcum termite.
You, Another, this is a good one that I have to dust off. You can call them a vanilla or niller for short. You can give them their own N-word.
Fucking niller.
It's incredible. I love it. Because, you know, like, so where we grew up, you know, the suburbs of Chicago weren't too far. And, like, you go to, like Naperville area. Oh, man. You can have a heyday with that stuff. Just all these like Bernie sticker Prius drive-in, either them type, or you get the like soccer mom and a Mercedes types,
and
you
here's have an
absolute heyday.
The best part is why I love my white racial slurs is you when you racially abuse these people with white racial slurs, there's no retort. They can't say you're being racist, because you go, you can't be racist towards white people no matter how much you want to be oppressed. Which is a classic line of theirs, of course. You tell them how you can't be racist against white people. You're actually, if anything, you're calling out white microaggressions right now. And I'm just simply denouncing the chalkroaches that oppress me.
I was just about to say that. According to them, you can't be racist towards white people. So how would they categorize what you're coming at them with? Just that you're being weird to them? There's nothing they can really say. I mean, yeah, you call somebody a talcum termite. I think I'm going to bust that one out next time I have the chance. Like, you missed some good ones. You got up for a second. You missed a couple good ones.
My son wanted to say goodnight to me, so I had to go give him a little hug. So sorry I missed the fun, but I'll
read this. Now, here's the fun part. So the aforementioned son there, my nephew, we could teach him these things and program a three-year-old. you get somebody these weapons at 3 years old, you make them dangerous, because people just don't know how to handle that. Like, dude, he called me a yogurt yeti. He called his second grade teacher a yogurt yeti.
No, dude. So listen to this. So yesterday, I have an 8-year-old daughter, and she had a play date with her friend. My wife and her mom set it up at our local public school where they go, and we've never gone to this park before. It's after school's over, obviously. And we go there, and like, first of all, I'm just like kind of like just fuming, because 70 to 80% of the kids have masks on after school. And I'm just like, these kids are just being taught to be obedient and to authority. So I'm kind of like just fuming, watching it happen. And we're there, you know, our kids aren't doing that. But, all of a sudden, like, a bunch of these kids leave. It must have been like an after class, like, you know, thing for parents who get off late. It's like, it's like a, you know, daycare for kids. They kind of all go inside. But there's this one group of kids playing football. And these two kids come up to me. They're about fifth grade. They come running up to me. They assume that I work for the school. And they go, Mister, can you come help us? This kid's being really bad. Like, he's saying the F word. He's saying the B word. He's saying the A word. And he says they're saying the N word that black people use. I'm sitting there like, first of all,
which one? Hurry. Which one? What are they saying?
Pretty wild that you guys know the rule of the N-word. You know that only a certain type of people can say it. Like, that's pretty cool already. But then I was like, okay, guys, like, I don't work here. This is not my jurisdiction. I'm not going to go scold somebody else's kid. They're like, but we think he wants to fight us. I'm like, okay, if that happens, I'll keep an eye out. Like, let me know. I'm not going to let you guys get into a fight. But as far as the profanity, yeah, just tell him to stop, dude. I don't know. I'm not his dad. I'm not a teacher. I don't have any authority here. And the kid comes running over right after I said it. He's like, weighs like 72 pounds. He's just like short fifth grade kid, but just full of piss and vinegar. And he goes, what the fuck are you guys doing? And I was like, hey, bud, dude, like, come on. That's uncalled for. We don't need the language. And he just looked at me like, he didn't say it, but his eyes said like, who the fuck are you to tell me what to do? Like, they start playing football and they're just kind of doing it. And like, but yeah, it was kind of wild. I was like, dude, this whole generation, it's going to be pretty wild to watch these like obedient people to authority. And then whatever this kid is made of,
like, can't be just before we started the podcast, I was taking the dog for a walk and I was by the park near my house. And there were these kids, they're like 14, 15 years old, like these girls. And they were, I was walking the dog and all of a sudden a soccer ball like rolls out in front of the path. And it's like, I'm going to scoop it up and throw it so they don't have to come like pet the dog. People are weird or whatever, you know, they don't want to pet a person's dog, understandably.
And so I throw it over. She's like, thanks. And they're outside and they're kicking a soccer ball back and forth 20 feet apart from each other. And she's wearing a mask outside. And it's like, so as you mentioned, we talked about this on the last episode too. And El Pupo, tell me what you think of this, but I think that we're going to see a great divide in Gen Z, where half of them are going to be super red pilled and just punk rock, like rebellious. And the other half are just going to be like, you know, Tony Fauci forever will be a deity to them and just be complete blue pilled.
We are very closely on to the path. And I'm glad that the Gen Z will lead the way of legalizing giving swirlies in the workplace.
Yeah.
And we are going to swirly our way out of this problem. And people can say it's an NAP violation all they like. I don't care.
Yeah.
Well, could you imagine how awesome that would be if you heard, if there was like a security camera video of like at Capitol Hill, like Fauci walking with like his books and binders of data and bullshit rhetoric. And then you just see like Thomas Massey walk past him and you just debooks him. That would be the greatest thing I'd ever seen.
Gotcha, bitch.
Just bully him. Call him fucking nerds. And, you know,
he hooks,
it's like
him
they're
by
playing
his
Dungeons and Dragons.
He hooks him by his underwear on top of Abraham Lincoln at that big old fucking statue.
Well, yeah, that's – we're talking about – sorry, go ahead, Tyler.
No, you're good. I was just going to say, I think it's coming. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, well, and I always had this strategy where when I have to use my jiu-jitsu in a street fight situation, for all the listeners, you don't want to get into you want to avoid a fight in the street at all costs. There are no winners. You're probably going to go to jail even if you win, and you could bounce somebody's head off a curb and they could die. It's just a stupid thing to get into. Having said that, if I ever actually need to fight somebody, what I'm going to do is take them down. I'm going to get to the side headlock position, and I'm going to give them noogies until they can name me 10 candy bars. Right. So it's completely, they're not going to have a mark on their face. They're going to be able to walk away and they're going to have nothing but humiliation. And if they want to press charges, they have to go to the police and say, this man held me down and he gave me noogies until I named 10 candy bars. And the police are just going to look at him and they're going to be like, what the fuck? You know, it's what you do. We did that in high school wrestling. You know, it's what we did to the freshmen. You'd hold them down and slap them on the forehead, give them noogies until they could name five cereals or whatever. So that's my plan. And I think that kind of hazing is how we get our way out of this. Don't use violence. It's a little bit of violence. Let's be honest. Just a tiny, like a little pinch of violence that they're able to walk away from, where you just humiliate people and make fun of them. Use all the memes, the cyberbullying, and noogies. That's how we win.
Here's the thing, though. You and I understand it as a little bit of violence. To them, you attempted murdered them. You were beating their head off of the sidewalk, and you had them in a strangle choke, which is what they'll call it. Yeah. And they couldn't breathe, by the way, despite telling them to get off, sir. And then I don't know where I'm going. Yeah, it's the worst thing that you could do to them. They're gonna be hyperbolic over every single detail, and they'll say, "Yeah, this guy almost tried to kill me." Look at what they said about the insurrectionists. The AOC says, "Oh yeah, those guys were trying to kill me, Ted Cruz. You tried to have assassins come after me. Yeah, those fucking genius assassins. You know, it's like the ninjas of today." By the way, Nancy Pelosi also, I think I've seen something today. She said she would fight off the attackers if they came to her office. I just want to say, look, if I'm in a hallway, right, and I'm like, if it's me, and then at the end of this hallway is Nancy Pelosi.
Satire, wherever he's going, this is satire.
And we're in Minecraft server, and she's in a Muay Thai stance. At first, I'd be like, holy shit, Nancy Pelosi knows Muay Thai. It'd be super sick. And then, like, I guess I wouldn't be finished in the thought of Nancy Pelosi knows Muay Thai, because after I will be thinking, oh, sick, she doesn't know that much Muay Thai. She actually, maybe she doesn't at all. She may have got lucky with the stance. I don't know. But point is, look, there's no way she's beating me in a fight. No fucking chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. She referred to herself as a street fighter. She goes, I'm pretty tough. I'm a street fighter.
I challenge Nancy Pelosi now to the streets. Nancy Pelosi, catch me in the fucking streets right now. If you're such a street fighter, we're going to see who's the better street fighter. I'll cut to whatever weight that you want me. Well, I don't know if I can. I don't know. She has a lot of Jenny's ice cream.
She probably weighs 88 pounds.
Yeah. You're gonna be on a commercial if you have to cut that much weight.
No, she doesn't weigh 88 pounds. She eats at least three babies a day, dude. She weighs way more than 88 pounds. The point is, she couldn't take me. I bet you guys could beat her up too, to be honest.
I don't think that one the dude that was wearing the Viking skull hat, he looked kind of big. He's a pretty big guy. All he was out of her weight class.
She's not making it to 10 candy bars, is what I'm saying. Dude.
Well, that's what
in Minecraft.
Nick, I was gonna say, like, what if you could give them enough noogies before they name candy bars, you might rub the blue out of their hair.
Yeah, that's not a bad point. Do you think
that's gonna be what gets you busted? Is your hand's gonna be all full of blue hair dye?
Or just dandruff and yeah.
Yeah.
That's how you find out they're vampires.
Or you get head lice, one of the two.
Yeah, that's pretty gross. El Pupo, do you think you could take Chuck Schumer in handcuffs if you were handcuffed behind your back? Do you think you could take Chuck Schumer in a regulated MMA fight?
Would I be able to attempt to get the handcuffs to the front of my body?
No. It's Herb Dean is refereeing. This is completely state. Well,
that's an early stoppage.
Like, if my hands are behind my back, Herb Dean says, all right, fight. I immediately sit down and try to get my hands to my front. I get disqualified?
No, you can do that. But I was going to say, you get to wear whatever you want, but Chuck Schumer is in his three-piece suit, and he's looking down at you over his condescending glasses and giving some speech, you know? So, he's coming after you.
You can even give him the gavel, dude. I don't care.
You can give him the gavel.
Oh, this is a fun. We could do like a rapid fire. That was just the one that came to my head, but it's like, what politicians do you think you could take with certain handicaps? You know, could have some fun with that. Especially,
by the way, I don't think he could hit me.
Just the only problem is, like, this is fun and all, but like, if this is being read as a transcript in the courtroom, makes me a little nervous.
So can you explain to us what Minecraft server you play on?
This conversation alone will get us landed in Gulag, but we're already going there. So,
Your Honor, let the record show he doesn't even own a copy of Minecraft.
Having said that, you know what politician could fuck a lot of people up is Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan was a fucking animal wrestler. He was a national champ, if I'm not mistaken. He was a national champ. D1 national champ.
Really?
That was the guy that was just roasting Fauci, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's a brawler. I mean, just intellectually and physically, apparently.
Oh, here's a good thing. This is going to be a great question. Pat myself on the back for this one early. We kind of talked about it earlier, and I don't remember who said it. I think maybe it was Keenan who said that a modern purple belt now would fuck up a Brazilian black belt 20 years ago. And I agree with that statement.
I do too. Anyone
who's made it to purple belt would agree with that statement. I mean, that's probably being generous to the purple belts, of course, but come on, let's be realistic. We have tape, so we can see that's true. Now, having said that, I bet I would be able to. I was not a good high school wrestler. I did high school wrestling, but I wasn't good at it. I bet I could pin Abraham Lincoln. He had to be a shit wrestler. Like, wrestling has to be way better now.
First of all, I agree with you because, I mean, I was also an okay high school wrestler, right? I wrestled 3 years. I didn't start till my sophomore year. So I was like a pinch above 500 my senior year. And I'm a lanky fuck. You know, I'm 6'1", 185.
Hell yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. So was Abraham Lincoln. So, you know, he can't wrestle. I think even like prime Abe, where you picture him with the big forearms and he's splitting wood before he was a politician and a mass murderer. I mean, there's probably only a handful of leaders, honestly. I think Putin is probably the hardest ass in the world right now as far as government positions. Ooh, that's the fight to make. Who do you guys got? Yeah, Jim Jordan versus Vladimir Putin. Who you guys got?
Jim Jordan, fuck him up.
Yeah, Jim Jordan slams him on his head and
he throws him for five, dude. Hell yeah.
Yeah,
we should set that up.
You know, that'd
be great. We should have said, look, we have the power. The leader Vegas of Russia and this American politician and set this up with our podcast.
You guys got your brother to fight Ben Askren. Why don't you just make another phone call?
That's my plan. Yeah, I got to call out one of the Paul brothers.
Who do you got? Who do you got in that? Ben Askren had a gut when he weighed in.
He has a gut every fight he's ever had. That's what he looks like.
Yeah,
dude, that's his appearance. It bums me out because I love Ben Askren. He's a libertarian too, by the way. If you go back to his Rogan episode a few years ago, and he was, I guess he was like at some Ron Paul event or whatever. But so he's like a real like Misesian libertarian. He's always been a specialist. He's a wrestler. It's what he does. He ragdolls people and he smothers them and he beats on them. He's never been a boxer. He looks awkward as shit boxing. And this was the perfect fight to pick for Jake Paul to make some money and get his name out there and say, I kicked a UFC fighter's ass. I hope that Ben Askren wins, but I think Jake Paul might actually pull it off.
Now, here's the thing. Do you strike, Nick? Do you strike?
No, not much. I mean, I used to. Never fought or anything like that. But I mean, I know super fundamentals of striking. I'm not completely clueless.
Well, there's a thing that happens a lot, and I love to see. We kind of talked about it earlier. The guy who comes in, who's probably could ragdoll most people in the streets, you know, striking wise. If it was just no rules, you're just in the streets, bro. But this individual puts on boxing gloves and people who are bad against normal, like my striking's subpar for MMA fighting, which is what I do. I don't box or do Muay Thai matches, but I do fight. My boxing's not very good for MMA. I'm definitely a ground guy. However, you get crazy street fighter guy in from the gym. Sure, he can ragdoll a lot of the country. This bad MMA boxing is still fucking elite over street fighter guy. Yeah. Every time it fucking kills and pieces him up every time. There's just certain things you know that guy doesn't. And if you seriously just stick to basics, I mean, you win every time. And I think that's really what Ben Askren has to do. He still knows boxing. Like I know the joke is at least the joke in my head that I tell myself, and I imagine everyone else in the world's in on it. Could I beat up Ben Askren in striking? I don't know. Maybe I could. He's such a bad striker. But at the same time, I have to go, no, dude, Ben Askren's been striking probably 10 times longer than I have. There's no way. Even if he's a shit striker in MMA, if him and I box, I bet he's still had 5,000 more boxing sparring matches than I have.
And he's still an elite athlete. That's the other thing. And yeah, I guess I think the question for me is how seriously has Jake Paul been taking it? And did he bring in like a nutritionist and the best boxing coaches he can find and sparring partners? Is he getting his sleep and doing road work and all this stuff? And I think maybe if he crammed and he was super passionate, he's been training years in a row. And if Ben Askren has been a couch potato, which he may have been, then maybe he's got something. He's got some sort of chance. And that's what I fear. But I'm rooting for Ben Askren all the way. Fuck Jake Paul. There could be only one Paul.
He trained with Freddie Roach for this, supposedly.
No way. Okay.
Yeah. And
I bet Freddie hated him.
They said that he took it seriously. So, I mean, we'll see. And the thing is too, is like Ben Askren's fought murderers. Like if he can survive that onslaught from Robbie Lawler, I don't think Jake Paul is going to be that much for him. I could see Jake Paul coming out first couple rounds and just trying to throw bombs and Ben just waiting for him to wear down. That's what I see.
Yeah, I knew instantly, and when I think about it, a lot of people are like, oh, Ben's probably not going to take it very seriously. He's fighting a YouTuber. That's not what people who fight do. If you're in a fight camp, you do fight camp. It's not – you don't play make-believe a fight camp. You're in a fucking fight camp. So it's serious every single time, even if you're fighting a fucking dork, because you don't want to get smoked. I don't think Jake Paul's ever had a real fight camp. I think he just goes to the freaking jazzercise gym and takes a few, you know, those lessons. And then goes, all right, well, let's got my pump on. I'm going to go get in a fight now and fight Nate Robb, which is ridiculous. Anyway, yeah, Ben Askren's going to destroy him. Post-fight camp, Ben Askren versus YMCA boxing class Jake Paul. It's not even – I don't even think it'll be well, it'll be fun to watch, but I don't think it'll be fair. And we're going to look back on this in hindsight and go, we can't keep making matches like this. This is someone's going to get hurt eventually. And That could they could be tomorrow, actually.
It well, could I don't know about. Are you guys going to buy the fight? Are you going to pay for it and watch it?
No. Oh man.
Neither am I, because I don't want to support the clown fights. I'm not a huge fan.
Oh, I'm going to watch it. I'm not. I haven't paid for a fight. I couldn't tell you when.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I'm at. I'll search, you know, search around for a stream. But there's also the Whitaker and Gastelum fight tomorrow. Might have to watch that too. So I might have the laptop going while I'm watching stuff on TV. That might be the game plan.
I think
not a bad plan.
I'm just gonna go downtown and get in a fight.
You're gonna go call somebody a talcum termite and it's gonna be on.
Downtown and get in a fight.
This will be like one of the most fun episodes to edit. I'm just listening back to this by myself and laugh my ass off. Usually they're like serious like conversations that we have. I'm like, wow, like we have Vin Armani on. It's like I listen back, I'm like, man, I didn't catch when you said that. This is very enlightening. It's such a great conversation. This one I'm just gonna be like, this is like stand up.
I got so nervous looking at your guys. Like, you had Gene Epstein on. I'm like, dude, what the fuck? I'm out of my element. Why do these guys want to talk to me? I must be. I'm really good at jiu-jitsu. That's probably it.
I mean, you check the boxes. You're like libertarian, BJJ. It's like, oh, we got one of those. Come on. we'll have a conversation.
And for people who think that like we're some crazy radicals, I mean, I can't speak for you guys, but I'm a sweetheart. You know, that's who I am. You know, I'll be nice to old ladies and hold doors open. And of course, it's completely hypothetical and satire. Like, anybody's going to get in a Muay Thai match with Nancy Pelosi. Okay, Fed boys, if you're listening, it's a joke.
The court won't play that part of this episode. Yeah,
CNN's going to cut that part out.
At the same time, Nancy Pelosi, don't let me catch you at Chick-fil-A, dog.
Chick-fil-A is too pure.
Yeah, you're right. Like she makes her fast food runs anyway. I doubt it.
I don't know if any of them do except Donnie T. Trump was a big McDonald's guy. I read some theory that someone had that he ate McDonald's because he thought that people were trying to poison him in the 80s. And he knew that fast food workers didn't give a fuck, so they wouldn't poison him. And that's how he got it. I could see it.
Yeah. Who knows?
Trump's a wild man. Remember, I think that didn't Biden challenge him to like push-ups or something?
Yeah, and Biden challenged some random guy that asked questions about Hunter. you want to do push-ups right now?
Come on, man. You know, this is I'll have to try to find the clip. I haven't looked for it in a while, but I remember this was 2012, so it was when Mitt Romney was running for president, and Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC challenged Mitt Romney's sons to a fight. That. No, like he legitimately challenged them to a fight. Like, think you're tough, whatever his name is. He's like, how about you come see me? We'll see who the tough guy is. And he was actually, I'm like, what the fuck? I was 17. I'm like, what the fuck am I watching right now?
I remember that. I remember watching that with you. We were in our parents' basement and you walked down and we like turned on the news and like that was on. You and I both looked at each other after he said it. We're like,
he's like 140 pounds soaking wet.
It's like it was because Mitt Romney's son wasn't like a veteran. He's like, he's never even served. You want to take on me? Come on. Here's my number. Call me. It's like this weird, like.
See, now those are the celebrity boxing matches I can get behind.
Yeah.
We need to make that happen.
I'd love to see a senator's son fight a, news anchor.
I want to see cracked out Hunter Biden throwing down.
We could have fun making the matchups. What we do is we say, here, it's a charity event and we have a great cause, right? Like kids with cerebral palsy or something. Like it's all the proceeds go to kids with cerebral palsy and we match up like, you know, what's her name? Whitmore from Michigan versus the MILF Christy Gnome from South Dakota. Like and they just go at it. Like
here's the thing.
We just have an undercard. We have like 15 fights and it's a great night for a great cause.
The witch versus the MILF. I love it.
You're never going to get convince those senators to agree though. If you say it's for kids with cerebral palsy, what you have to do is say, look, the donation proceeds, it's going to rebuilding little St. James Island. Okay. So give us all the money that you got and you'll have everyone signing up. You're going to have so much money coming in. And then there's a lot of matchups. By the way, save Hunter Biden for me. Okay, I call dibs on that one.
With or without crack?
I'll smoke the crack. I'll do whichever he wants to do.
The boxing commission eliminates that from the testing protocol.
Well, here's the thing. In certain states, you can fight, and they're not – the state doesn't really have a lot of money. Their commission doesn't have a lot of money, so they don't necessarily drug test you. So there could be someone who's getting in fights in their particular state they live in mm-hmm. under the influence of marijuana, which is a suspendable offense. You could be – the person could be on the show. I don't know. But – it's entirely possible. I think we should just have the fight here in this state this guy lives in that I heard about. And that way, you know, you can get everyone cracked out. They're not going to drug test.
Just Hunter's pupils are the size of a freaking pool ball.
All right. Well, that
annihilated.
That brings us to about the 1 hour mark. So
one last matchup. DeSantis versus Newsom. Who do you guys got? What round by what finish? If you're going to make a bet, you have to make a bet for like 10 to 1 odds. What do you got?
Are we going like nursing home deaths or?
No, I say no. In a sanctioned 3-round, 5-minute MMA fight. Personally, I got Ron DeSantis by first round TKO.
I'll second that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think DeSantis comes out throwing bombs. He survives an early flurry, hits him with a hook across the jaw. Newsom, it's too much soy in his diet. His muscles are going to give.
I think it actually stops first round by a doctor stoppage when Newsom's angiochrome supply runs really low mid-fight. He has an adrenaline angiochrome dump and you watch him age 40 years in front of your very eyes and he withers away. So DeSantis by win by, I guess, opponent being sand after the fight.
Looks like that dude in, was it the third Indiana Jones?
Hell yeah,
ages 100 years.
So El Popo, this is normally the part of the podcast where I let the guest plug their social media, but you've been banned from Twitter, so this is new to me. I'm trying to do what I can, but where potentially could people find you if you ever get put back on Twitter?
There's a website. I don't know who owns it, but it's called boys.town, boyz.town. And I guess since I'm not on Twitter, I'll go back to posting on there. You could also find, if you wanted to listen to white people racist humor, and that's not white people being racist, although it is, I guess, what it is. But it's being racist at white people, you know, the ones who deserve it. You could find that on Not a Podcast, which can also be found on boys.town. I do that with Mr. Neocon Remover. And that's the only plugs I have. I guess if you see me on Twitter, look for a guy. By the way, that's my other thing. I say that I'm gay on Twitter. I'm not gay, but I tell everyone I'm gay. And I really ham it up, too. That way, and the reason I do it is so I can say – oh, dude, like if I see someone posting their Funko Pop wall, I can go, dude, that's gay. And I can go, it's not good gay like me. It's bad gay like Reddit Gold or knowing your Hogwarts house. So it's my way I can call things gay without being in trouble. And it doesn't make me homophobic. If I'm homophobic, I wouldn't call myself gay, right?
It's true.
Checkmate.
Chestnut checkers.
Yeah.
I love it.
But if anyone asks, I hit on everyone, and I'm very, very gay. So I tell them it's true, I am gay.
Awesome.
Noted.
That's my plugs. That's my plugs. I'm gay.
This has been a whole new style of podcasting, but I really enjoyed it. So thank you so much, El Popo. I really appreciate it. For the listeners, please rate and review on iTunes.
Bullshit 4-star reviews either.
Yeah, that's so weak. Don't go, oh, if they did this really minute thing that caters to my really fucking strange, weird thing I like, I would give it 5 stars. But until then, it's 4 stars. Like, dude, is it very good? Come on, do 5 stars. 4 stars is you have an authentic complaint. Stop having weird idiosyncrasies and rating stuff 4 stars. And this is coming from a guy who has no podcast ratings at all. So don't do me 4 stars either.
Yeah, it's one star or five star or no comment.
Yeah,
anything in between needs like a real articulate, like novel explanation of what we thought about the podcast. But anyhow, also Freedom Fest, July 21st, 24th will be there. And yeah, please rate review the show. And yeah, thanks for listening. Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.